This is Activist News. Greetings and welcome to Activist News, a bi-weekly multimedia news magazine challenging the corporate media's version of events. News and analysis brought to you by people making news by organizing for social change. Tonight, we'll have four issues. Iraq, what's really behind Washington's war threat? A Cuba labor leader speaks out against the planned free trade zone of the Americas. Reparations now. African Americans demand reparations and compensation for slavery and its legacy. And South Koreans demonstrate outrage against the continued U.S. military domination of their country. I'm Judy Chang. Please stay tuned. This is Activist News. Financial scandals continue to plague the U.S. corporate elite as Enron, WorldCom, Global Crossing, and Martha Stewart Online yield to Securities and Exchange Commission's investigations. Against this backdrop of corruption and bankruptcy, the Bush administration is focusing all of its attention on a new war against Iraq. But what's really behind this deadly war against Iraq? Are we really powerless to oppose it? This question was addressed at a recent August 13th event in New York City with former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark. The following report is produced by Sarah Flounders, co-director of the International Action Center.
I don't know of a time in history, and I don't expect to hear of one, in which an individual or a government or a group of individuals in and for our government has so taunted a people with the threat of violence and death as the United States has consistently taunted Iraq for the last more than a year and a half. I mean, we've been bombing them every day, don't kid yourself. Just the threats are a crime. They're a crime against peace because they threaten war. But worse than that, we've motivated the American people overwhelmingly to paralysis, anesthetize. It's far more than bread and circus. It's an actual mental manipulation that causes us to passionately believe in many instances that our safety and freedom itself depend on destroying that country. We ought to remember that eloquent speech of George W. Bush at West Point, in which he said, "Every hour of freedom the American people have had is a result of our wars." The war. Freedom comes from war. Constant war. But it would be a fatal mistake to think for a minute that this is all George Bush's wish and nobody else's, or that it's some revenge he has because he's upset because people accuse his father of not having gone the last mile in 1991. This is something that power in the United States wants. It wouldn't happen this way under any other circumstances. And if we can't recognize that, we just don't understand what's going on.
It's clear to everyone in the whole world that the Bush administration is planning a massive onslaught against Iraq. Every day in the newspaper, aircraft carriers, planes, tanks, troops being moved into position. A new war scenario played out day after day. An invasion from three sides, or will it be incinerating the city of Baghdad to destroy the Iraq leadership? Or will it be a war fought from aircraft carriers? What's the meaning of these scenarios being played out day after day in public? It's really an effort of the Bush administration to create an air of inevitability about the war, to demoralize the opposition. It's psychological warfare against the people right here in the United States and all around the world, to say no one can stop the Pentagon. And it's being done because the Bush administration and the Pentagon know that the one force they have to fear is a powerful and explosive people's movement.
Can a people's movement stop war? Dr. Michio Kaku addresses this issue.
In 1969, we now know that President Nixon had a plan to use nuclear weapons again against Vietnam, and that plan was called Operation Duck Hook. Nixon revealed why he did not execute Operation Duck Hook against the Vietnamese after November 1st of 1969. We now know the reason. The reason is that just before and just after November 1st of 1969, there were 500,000 people marching in the streets of Washington, D.C. In his memoirs, President Nixon said he was rattled, he was frightened, he was angered by the fact that 500,000 Americans staged 2 demonstrations, sandwiching the November 1st ultimatum. And at that point, he appeared on television with notes. And his notes said, "Don't get frightened, don't get rattled," even as the American people were saying, "We want peace in Vietnam." In other words, the peace movement stopped the use of nuclear weapons against the Vietnamese.
There is enormous potential to build a powerful movement against the war. This is a war for corporate profit, for oil, and everyone knows it. We're part of the plans of the International Answer Coalition. Act now to stop war and end racism. Calling for coordinated actions on Saturday, October 26th. Call us, contact us, visit our website at internationalanswer.org. Be part of the plans for Saturday, October 26th.
Begin mobilizing now. Buses and vans will be available for thousands of people to come to Washington, D.C. on October 26th for a mass march to say no war against Iraq.
We can make a difference. Money for jobs and health care, for education, not war against Iraq.
This is Activist News.
In July, several hundred people, mostly from the U.S., attended a Cuba labor conference in Windsor, Canada, which featured a high-level delegation of Cuban trade unionists. The conference was sponsored by the U.S.-Cuba Labor Exchange, which was forced to hold the event outside the U.S. because Washington denied visas to all 9 members of the Cuban delegation. Organizers say the conference was designed to increase friendship between U.S. and Cuban workers and to educate about the case of the 5 Cubans imprisoned inside the United States. A major discussion focused on the planned FTAA, Free Trade Agreement of the Americas. It was first proposed 2 years ago by the United States during an Americas summit. The FTAA proposes a free trade zone from the northern tip of Canada to the southern tip of South America, excluding one country, Cuba. In the following segment, Sally O'Brien speaks with Manuel Montero about the FTAA. He is director of the Americas section of the Confederation of Cuban Workers International Department.
It will be a strengthening of what they have obtained through NAFTA. So they will have the full control of the economies of the Latin American countries. They will be empowered to be in a better position in the competition, economic competition against the Asian bloc and the European Union. And that's what they are trying to get, just to have the control of the economies of Latin American peoples, and that their companies, their big multinational companies, will be doing whatever they want, and there won't be any independence, any sovereignty in our countries, because even now, through NAFTA, the companies can fire the governments for things that they think are not in their benefits, or if they think they are losing profit, they can fire the government. So what kind of sovereignty will left for the Latin American peoples? So that's why we are participating together with all unions here in Canada, in the States, and in Latin American countries, in the Social Hemispheric Alliance, to stop NAFTA and to demand for a change in those views, and to work for the real integration of Latin American nations, and not for fighting as they are, to make the Latin American nations become part and controlled by the United States Corporation.
Of course, as head of the Department of the Americas, you touched upon the case of what is known in the United States as the Miami Five, and that's the 5 Cubans who were convicted as spies, even though there was no obvious infiltration in U.S. government or work or anything like that. And could you just share your position about the Miami Five?
Well, it is not just my position. It is the position of 11 million Cubans. It is the Cuban government position, the Cuban unions position, and all social organizations in Cuba and the Cuban people in general. And it has been shown through the big rallies that we have been celebrating in the last months. Recently, we had a rally of 1.2 million people in Havana, and it was around 7 million people in the whole country just rallying and saying no to that kind of policy and claiming for the freedom of these Cuban patriots and heroes who were involved not in any kind of spying activities against the security, the national security of the United States. They were involved in trying to avoid the terrorist groups who are based in Miami, in Florida, to take any action, terrorist actions, against Cuba. These five Cubans were doing precisely that. They were involved in those terrorists, into those terrorist groups, to detect their actions and to let Cuba know about their actions before they committed them and trying to avoid those actions taken against Cuba and killing people. So they were unfairly condemned. The first violation was a violation to an amendment of the American Constitution by which any people is deserves a fair trial in the territory where not any pressure will be exerted on the jury or on the judges. And the judge refused to change the place of the case because we knew, and everybody knows, that in Miami there won't be any fair trial. The members of the jury were continuously focused on cameras. They were taped. The plates of their cars were taped when they left the jury, the court. The prosecutor didn't find any real proof against them in this case because even the prosecutor called different high-ranked people of the United States, people in the Pentagon, even generals, who were stating there that they didn't have any proof of these Cubans making any spying action against the national security of the United States or any military installation. One of them has been condemned to 2 life sentences plus 18 years. Another 1 life sentence plus 15 years and 5 years conditional sentence. What is that? Something that shows that there is a revenge, a hate against our people, and the hate was represented through the condemnations that these 5 heroes received. People in the United States have created committees for the defense and asking for the freedom of these Cuban anti-terrorist fighters. We will go fighting on this for their freedom until we get their freedom, because it will be a success of justice and reason.
This is Activist News. Johnny Stevens, co-director of People's Video Network, speaking at an anti-war forum.
It is said that over 60 million people have died in the transatlantic slave trade. So that brings to mind and to reality that the transatlantic slave trade is really an anti-war issue. Wasn't it the colonists from Belgium, from France, from Germany, from Britain, from the U.S. that actually carried out and enslaved Africans? So it's only fair at this particular time that we join thousands calling for reparations. Reparations for labor unpaid, reparations for murder, mass murder that was carried out by these colonialist powers. And who did it benefit mostly? It benefited the corporations.
Hi, this is Peta Lindsay. I'm here at the Millions for Reparations demonstration in Washington, D.C. We're here with tens of thousands of people from around the country that have converged to demand reparations now. We're going to be interviewing a couple of people on the topic of reparations, kind of why they're here today and what they hope to accomplish. Hi, we're here with Monica Moorhead, who's a coordinator of Millions for Mumia, as well as an editor of Workers' World Newspaper. So why do you feel the struggle for reparations is so important right now?
Well, the struggle for reparations is so important because it helps to elevate the struggle against racism in this country. We're not only talking about reparations as a practical issue in terms of repayment and retribution for the African American community and the many, many generations of racist discrimination and segregation and all of that flows from the legacy of slavery and the transatlantic slave trade. But we talk about what's happening right here today. The issue of reparations helps to talk about the great suffering that a lot of African Americans still are subjected to in this country, whether it's mass incarceration or terrible health care conditions or homelessness, underemployment, the layoff, the police repression, everything that is going on today in terms of institutionalized racism can be stemmed back to the issue of slavery. And that's why the U.S. government doesn't want the issue raised. And whenever it is raised, they try to demonize it.
Listen, my name is Russell Roberts. I'm from Labor's Local 413. I want everybody out there in the unions to organize. We have to get our market share where it needs to be. Chester, PA, Labor's Local 413.
Barbara Lewis, National Co-Chair of NCOBRA.
So all we have to do is say, is NCOBRA in the house? Because NCOBRA is a international, mass-based, grassroots movement whose only mission is to take care of the reparations business of the family. Now, your parents have already taught you everything you need to know about reparations. Now, this is the kindergarten part. Here's a question. When you take something that doesn't belong to you, what are you supposed to do? Give it back.
Minister Louis Farrakhan, Nation of Islam.
We have fought in every war for a freedom that we don't enjoy. And the president is getting ready to send black and brown and poor white to fight in Iraq. Somebody that never called us nigger, never bothered us, never took from us. Our fight is not in Iraq. Our fight is in America, on the streets of America, for justice for every black man, woman, and child that has died unjustly under the yoke of oppression.
Sharon Black CC, Shop Steward, UFCW Local 27.
There is probably not a single issue that is more important or more crucial to the trade union movement than examining the history of slavery in this country.
Brenda Stokely, President, Local 1707, AFSCME.
Workers, let's not call them slaves. They were working in the field. They were working in the house. That's what they're doing for free. And those workers in the United States, go to your factory, go to your office building, go to your hospital, go anywhere and work for 35, 40, 60 hours for free. They would not do that. So they need to understand that those people, our descendants, who did do that, need to be fairly compensated, just like when they go every year or two or three years to the table to negotiate a contract. What are they negotiating? Work terms, work conditions, and proper, correct, just compensation for their labor. So if there's a group of folks who never got compensated, it should be real clear to them that they need to be compensated with interest for all the time that they work for food.
Roger Wareham, attorney, December 12th movement.
Free in 1997 to hold this World Conference Against Racism. Immediately, we, in terms of the December 12th movement, who had our own independent status as a non-government organization in the United Nations, began pushing for three issues that we thought were crucial to the success of the World Conference and crucial, and success being determined by our ability to push the issue of reparations. The first issue was the declaration by the World Conference that the transatlantic slave trade and slavery was a crime against humanity. We wanted an international recognition of what has happened to Africans in the transatlantic slave trade and slavery to be recognized as a crime against humanity, because our position was, if what has happened to Africans in that period was not a crime against humanity, then there was no resonance to that term at all. Then there had never been crimes against humanity committed against any people in the history of the world.
This is Activist News. In our final story today, Activist News turns to events in South Korea, where for the past month, anti-U.S. demonstrations have taken place throughout the country. While the Korean armistice was signed on July 17, 1953, the U.S. military continues to this day to maintain a strong presence, holding military exercises throughout the country. Abuses against the Korean population, while largely unreported, are regular and unpunished. In addition, under the Korean Security Act, dating back to the 1950s, Koreans protesting U.S. military presence are subject to prosecution and imprisonment. However, on June 13th, an incident occurred which left two 13-year-old Korean girls dead. Since then, anti-U.S. demonstrations have broken out in many Korean towns and cities, as we hear in the following interview with Yumi Jung of the Korean Truth Commission.
We are here today as part of international joint action to protest the deaths of two South Korean girls who were ran over by United States military armored vehicle on June 13th in Ugyeongbu, South Korea. Thus far, U.S. military hasn't given a formal apology on this matter, and we are seeking a formal apology along with complete removal of U.S. military from South Korea.
We are demanding that those people who are responsible for running over these two girls who were on their way to transport the body to come to justice. There has been many cover-ups by United States military. Many of the crimes committed by U.S. military personnel in South Korea are not being punished. Thousands and thousands of people have been shown up, including high school and junior high school students demanding their friends, justice. And people are openly burning the U.S. flag. People are openly destroying some of the U.S. military bases, items from the wall. People jumped over the U.S. military bases wall and then staged the demonstration inside of the base, which is first time ever that happened in South Korea. They are doing this despite the fact that they are being beaten by the police, and they are being jailed by South Korean police and U.S. military. It's not just that this case. Past 50 years, United States military has been occupying South Korea since 1945, so I should say it has been past 55 years of their occupation, aside all those U.S. war crimes that they committed from 1950 to 53, Korean War. Over 100,000 cases have been reported of the crimes that was committed by U.S. servicemen. And you know, those crimes range from the rape, murder, theft, robbery, traffic accidents, and all that. And people have been suffering all these years, and they are saying enough is enough.
The Korean people are up in arms right now. They're protesting all over South Korea, demanding accountability, demanding that the U.S. troops that commit crimes against the people, whether they're reckless disregard for civilians, whether there's the murder of Korean women or the beatings of Korean women or the prostituting of Korean women, all of the attendant human miseries that go with U.S. foreign troop occupation in Korea and elsewhere. The Korean people want this to come to an end, and here we are in New York City with the Korea Truth Commission and the International Action Center to say that we are in solidarity with the Korean people. We demand with them that the U.S. troops leave Korea, not tomorrow, but today, that the United States allow the Korean people to determine their own destiny free from outside interference, And if allowed to determine their own destiny, the Korean people will undoubtedly seek to reunify their country, to bring North and South that have been divided since 1945 together, to bring the 10 million family members who are separated together again after this long, cruel period of division, and to allow the Korean people as a reunified country to determine their own destiny. That's what the Korean people want, and that's why we're here in New York City outside the Armed Forces recruiting station in Times Square to show solidarity with that struggle.
Activist News is brought to you by media activists and progressive journalists from People's Video Network, WBAI-FM 99.5 Radio, WBIX Internet Radio, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, Downtown Community TV, and Free the Media. Visit our website at activistnews.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Judy Chang. ¶¶